open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. First case is 99-256, and that is civil service charge against Donald C. Piper. Donald Piper, the city of Dayton. Mr. Hepburn.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good morning. I'm Richard Hepburn. I'm here today representing the county officer, Donald Piper, in this matter. With court permission, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my argument. In case of court, Donald Piper, Dayton police officer for 15 years prior to this occurrence, had allegations lodged against him of inappropriate conduct in the bar to date. The allegations dated to July 9th, 1996. He was, in fact, charged criminally, was tried, and was acquitted of those charges. The Dayton Police Department Internal Affairs Division began an investigation into the incident after his acquittal. He was required to participate in an interview on January 30th, 1997, at which
Councilman, we've read the briefs and we understand the facts. So we need, I think, to get right to the law because the time is short. Has there been a stay during this period of time?
I believe so, Your Honor, yes.
So he has never served the 5 days?
Yes.
Notwithstanding what the Court of Appeals did?
Correct.
And obviously the Civil Service Commission reversed the 5 days and the trial court affirmed it?
That's correct.
Now, how do you read the Court of Appeals' opinion as to why they reversed? Because he was not sworn as a witness?
Yes, sir. That's how I read the opinion. From where I sit, the Court of Appeals said that the statute proposed to 9.84 just doesn't apply to this particular proceeding because in order to appear as a witness, one must be sworn.
Are you, in effect, appearing as a witness on behalf of your client today?
No, sir, I don't believe I am. I'm appearing as an advocate. I'm not here to give a statement as to things that I personally perceive back during this investigation.
Well, but it's what you know about the case, and oftentimes people become witnesses who know things about a case.
Yes, sir.
I'm just trying to equate it with, we accept your professional representation of him without ever being sworn, even. I guess I was just having trouble figuring out the grammatical difference and where the Court of Appeals was going, and I thought maybe you could help with that.
Well, I'm not sure. I think what the Court of Appeals was trying to do was to avoid a situation where any time a police officer or any other civil servant was called into his supervisor's office and said, "Hey, tell me about what happened yesterday. Why did your snowplow go off the road?"
Can the city require through its internal affairs division a police officer to respond, one, without counsel, two, to take a polygraph examination, and three, discharge if they refuse? Without giving up constitutional rights?
Sorry, sir, question is that...
Can a city require that as a work rule? That you have to appear before IA and waive all of your constitutional rights, including counsel, silence, and so on. Can they do that? And if you refuse to waive your rights, can they suspend you?
Right.
All right, so what if he walked out of this hearing?
He did walk out of this hearing, and suspended.
For the 5 days?
Yes.
Okay. Now, had he answered the questions, and let's assume just for, I know he was acquitted and it was fine, but let's assume for purpose of argument that he was actually culpable, had done something wrong, and responded to that. Then he could be fired.
He could be fired or receive any number of much more severe penalties since what occurred.
There isn't anything in the briefs with regard to the collective bargaining agreement. Isn't there a provision with regard to this in the collective bargaining agreement concerning officers' rights before the Internal Affairs Division?
As I read the record, Your Honor, there is reference made to right to counsel. In fact, when Sergeant Miller first spoke to Officer Piper at the interview where he refused to participate without counsel, one of the very first things Sergeant Miller asked him was, do you waive your right to counsel? And there were discussions about the right to counsel throughout that conversation. Now, the Court of Appeals tangentially discussed that and indicated it was not clear from the record whether Sergeant Miller was referring to the statutory right to counsel versus the contractual right to counsel.
Do you know, did that right flow from the collective bargaining agreement or from constitutional protections? Do you know in this case?
I do not know for sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Hempling, on page 11 of your brief, you referred to, I'm sorry, the appellee's brief, with the reference to the appellant having done the walkthrough later with his attorney. Did that happen?
I can't answer that for sure, Your Honor. I was not trial counsel, and there have been several spin-off proceedings from this. I'm not quite clear what happened subsequently with regard to that walkthrough. My position in this is simple. It's my position that the statute says what it says and means what it says. It's written in very broad terms. It's written to include the right to counsel in any proceeding before any department, any investigation. The phrase that caught the Court of Appeals' attention, and the reason we are here today, is the Court of Appeals determined one must be sworn to be appearing as a witness.
Counsel, let's assume your same argument that you have the right to counsel. In a criminal setting, a criminal trial, when I was a trial judge, if you had someone who appeared for a hearing and didn't have an attorney, you gave them two options. You can go on your own without an attorney, or you could get an attorney, but you have to waste your time. And, you know, they were left with that choice. Why would your client have any greater rights to if he wouldn't waive his time, or wouldn't the law automatically consider his time waived if he insisted that he wouldn't waive his time?
One thing that happened in this case, Your Honor, there was already a major dispute among the parties as to whether time limits within which to bring charges had already expired.
So about that period of time, the hearing and when it's rescheduled, then you could take out that situation.
Your Honor, I believe the trial judge, if he or she is doing their job correctly, when confronted with a situation of a criminal defendant hearing, perhaps right at the last day or within the last day or two of the speedy trial provisions running, if that person appears without an attorney on that day and the court has to make a decision, force this person to go forward alone, even though the court knows there have been prior proceedings with representation, or explain to the defendant what his or her speedy trial rights are and request a waiver. I believe that that can be done in a criminal case, but there must be a very careful explanation to that defendant of what exactly is being waived and for how long. That didn't occur here. There was no request to waive the time limits, and Officer Piper is standing there knowing that these time limits are already an issue. He doesn't have an attorney with him. His attorney can't whisper in his ear, don't worry about it, the time limits have already run. His attorney can't offer him any advice at that point about what the effect of that waiver is. Is it a waiver for 2 days so that his attorney can be there? Is it a waiver of unlimited duration? None of that was discussed in those cases.
But it would appear from the questioning of your client that the questioner thought he had a right to an attorney.
I'm sorry.
It would appear that the questioner of your client thought he did have a right to an attorney.
Yes, sir.
Because
yes, sir.
You say he asked him, you waive your right to representation.
That's correct. And one of the issues that was argued in one of the many proceedings here was that that somehow stopped the city from later claiming there was a right to an attorney, and that issue has kind of been lost by the time we got to this.
Did you say that there's some question in the record whether or not that colloquy actually took place?
No, sir, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that conversation did take place. Sergeant Miller did in fact refer to Officer Piper's right to an attorney several times.
So the sergeant did admit that he asked him whether or not he was going to waive his right to counsel?
Yes. Okay. I hope I haven't missed the white light in answering these questions.
No, the white light is not.
Okay. I would submit to the court that there probably is some legitimate concern about interpreting this statute so broadly that everybody that walks into the chief of police's office has to show up with a lawyer. That's a legitimate concern. But I would submit that there has to be some drawing of the line, that there has to be some cutting back of what appears to be an extremely broad scope of language in this statute.
Is there any importance to the phrase "we're participating in a hearing"? Was this in effect an actual hearing?
This was not an actual formal adjudicatory hearing. I would suggest that if that phrase was meant to define the entire scope of the statute, you wouldn't have the broad language that appears before it. You wouldn't have the language talking about anyone or any public official, department, etc. And I would submit to the court that those situations where someone is most likely to be placed under oath are, in fact, those formal adjudicatory hearings. And if this statute is not limited to formal adjudicatory hearings, then it doesn't make sense to limit it to people who are placed under oath as well. I would submit if a distinction has to be made, it should be made in terms of who is compelled to appear before this body. It is those persons who are compelled to appear before the body that, first of all, need counsel the most. And second of all, like Officer Piper, he was compelled to appear. He was compelled to respond to questions. And all of that was done without the aid and advice of his attorney, who had represented him for several months, was extremely familiar with the case, and would be able to tell him what his rights were in this situation, including making the decision, do you answer their questions and risk a 5-day suspension? I'm sorry, do you refuse to answer and risk a 5-day suspension? Or do you answer the questions and perhaps run the risk of some more serious consequences? That's where the attorney comes in handy. That's what Officer Piper should have received in this case. He did not. He was suspended for it. And I submit, as I read the statute, I don't think there's much room for interpretation. But if it must be limited
case you understand, you are going to argue with the place of the difference, that right?
Yes. A little private problem. Initially, as I indicated, I'd like to apologize for a typographical error. I did not catch on the first page of the article, the first page of the brief. The sentence should have read, the issues in the case presently before the court is twofold. First, the right to counsel as set forth in Ohio Revised Code RC, close of Rand 9.84, applies where a police department initiates an internal investigation into the possible officer wrongdoing when the officer being investigated is required to cooperate in the administrative gathering of information, and including making untoward statements.
Thank you. About the 60-day limit here. In fact, it had passed, hadn't it? How do you determine the 60-day time limit?
It's determined by a number of factors, including what is going on in the outside world in terms of a criminal investigation. So it's a collective bargaining agreement issue, which isn't really before the court. And the only thing that is pertinent for that analysis is that the employer had to be concerned that this has become an issue. And until the court of law had determined the resolution of that issue, was on notice that this whole thing could fall right under him if they didn't act prudently and expeditiously.
That was the reason he was asked if he would waive the time.
I'm not sure why he asked. We're dealing with a police sergeant who's not an attorney. I'm not sure he had much more than maybe a high school education, possibly an associate's degree. If that's the routine there, he had an attorney with him. But it was made clear to him throughout this that he could have brought an attorney with him. He could have an attorney with him. Whether we're getting him the right to an attorney by virtue of a collective bargaining agreement or just being nice guys is another issue entirely. I think the fact that the sergeant had asked him that just shows that we weren't trying to in any way preclude him or box him into a corner where he didn't have an opportunity to have full representation if he would cooperate to some extent in looking at the concerns that we had in terms of dealing with the practicalities of collective bargaining agreement time limits.
When was the previous, you referred to the previous interview, he had an attorney at a previous interview?
As I recall, it was less than 2 weeks before that. And in this instance here, you have to remember, he didn't give any alternative to not showing up. It's just, we're not showing up today, reschedule, maybe we'll show up later on. And that is a problem. But there's another problem here with this case, and that is the functional reality would result if the Mr. Piper's interpretation of the statute would be adopted by this court. As a practical matter, two things would happen. Any time a court, the Supreme Court, or a secretary, conduct was brought up to question, and you ask, what happened? That person would be entitled to have legal representation present. The fact that the city asked what happened through its IA Bureau in a more formalistic approach, though, as to avoid any interference of impropriety that might function had the person's immediate supervisor asked what happened, is just a matter of form over substance.
That's just a more formalized approach. You ever been before one of those IA boards?
This is a board.
I'm talking about in the sergeant's office with the lieutenant looking over the shoulder asking those direct questions.
I have been in this situation.
And you're not saying that's an informal sort of nice, good old boy discussion, is it?
No, But with all due respect to your honor, I would imagine you standing in front of you and having to answer some serious questions about any conduct I had would not be, as your clerk or whatever, would not exactly be a holiday.
You indicated, and my concern with this case is even beyond the statute. You indicated that, do you agree that he had the right, if his constitutional right was going to be violated, to leave the hearing?
I don't believe that at all.
All right. For instance, let me just do one more thing, and then you can respond, and I'll be done with it. In Henneman versus Toledo, we faced something like this, only it was an open records request, and the issue is appearing before these IA boards. And we said in footnote 4, there the Toledo Police Patrolman's Association asserted certain things with regard to going before the IA board. It's argued the disclosure of such statements made under such circumstances violates the constitutionality guarantee right against self-incrimination. We note that the existence of such policy in the department compelling members to respond to questioning under threat of discipline can have no bearing on the rights of third persons. While we express no opinion on whether the department's policy violates the Fifth Amendment and its guarantee against self-incrimination, it could be argued that any such department policy or bargaining contract provision would be fraught with constitutional difficulty of immense proportions. Now, did he have the right to walk out of that hearing anyway?
I don't believe he does with the facts of this case.
So you can force him to violate his rights against self-incrimination, and you can force him to respond to questions that he would not have to respond to in another context. And if he doesn't respond, he can't leave. He's subject to discipline.
He would not have been subject to any other collateral impediment. In other words, this could not have been used against him in any criminal proceedings. It could not have been used against him playing any other civil proceedings except for what was going on with internal affairs.
Wait a minute. This isn't collateral proceeding when you lose your job.
Well,
he didn't know that there was just going to be a 5-day suspension.
No, he didn't. But at the same time, Your Honor, there's another issue at stake here. If we're going to look at this, let's look at the entire facts. One of the facts in this issue is the fact that all that was said to him is if you want to appear and slow up our proceedings, waste some time. Give us a waiver. He offered nothing short of, I'm not doing nothing to anything. You're going to have to take the risk, and you're going to have to give me rights. I have no right under the Constitution. First Amendment, all the way up, is unqualified.
What would your position be had he shown up with a lawyer, had the lawyer not been engaged in some other activity at that moment? And first question, did you do it? Lawyer says, don't answer. No more questions, and they leave. Discipline?
Perhaps.
That's
perhaps
the point.
Perhaps. It would depend upon a number of other circumstances. But going right back, I think the statute has to be looked at in terms of some practical impact. So if the court is inclined to adopt Mr. Piper's construction, you must consider that even if a witness in a traffic accident or a crime would also be entitled to have an attorney present and slow up the proceedings, if you will.
No constitutional right is raised in this appeal, is it? It's only the statute at issue.
The only issue here is the statute and whether it's been violated under the fact. Remember, the statute also says a witness to appearing as a witness before any department or representative thereof in any investigation shall be permitted to be accompanied and advised by an attorney. Well, that would include a witness to a traffic accident, which many of us almost had on the record.
I think what's giving us trouble is that statute is a very broad statute, written for the benefit, it seems to me, primarily of citizens who are find themselves being witnesses before boards or bureaus or whatever. Here, he was a subject of, he was more than a witness, he was a subject of the, whatever you want to call it, not investigation, but he was alleged to engage in conduct that he shouldn't have engaged in, so he's more than a witness, just a witness here. I'm not sure what legally that makes a difference. But I think that's the trouble we're having.
There's two things here. I don't believe any employee to interfere with the employer's determination as to what happens with regards to questions about misconduct, especially that employee doesn't have to worry about any lateral issues outside the job scope. And I think labor law has historically said it's a number of things.
He kind of did do.
You almost got the constitution.
The interview, you said, on a subject and walk-through interview, comment coming by the attorney without incident. What is that? What does that refer to?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Page 11 of your brief, on a subsequent walk-through interview, the appellant was accompanied by his attorney without incident. The appellant was never told that he could not bring his attorney, he was told he could bring his attorney, so forth. Did he, this whole issue is whether or not he would do a walk-through with somebody from the department where his alleged inappropriate conduct occurred. Isn't that right? He said he wouldn't do the walkthrough without a lawyer.
And he had an attorney with him, and he was told he could bring this attorney with him, and he was told that if his attorney couldn't appear, he could bring another attorney with him.
Did the walkthrough occur then? That's what I don't understand.
The walkthrough occurred sometime after that, I believe. And it's not completely in the record, but sometime, it was a week or 2 weeks or what happened later.
Okay, so after it was determined that he was insubordinate, he then performed the walkthrough, apparently.
Yeah. Well, it's on time or whatever, but it got worked out as far as the walkthrough, as far as the information gathering issue. But, you know, it goes back to two things, and I have to emphasize. Had the alternative occurred, and the folks down at IA, Sergeant Miller, said, okay, we just hold up everything, and not, you know, do any impediment to you doing whatever you want to do, sir, with this. The level of uncertainty is reached when 2, 3, 4 weeks later, this will now my attorney's ready to come. And oh, by the way, you know that time limit issue? It's now definitely lapsed. There's no way a court of appeals or a commonplace court would disagree that it now has lapsed, which just tells you that's hostage. That's one issue.
Well, or a court of appeals, or somebody may say, well, you asked for an attorney time when your attorney is present, so you effectively waived the time limit.
I think that's
also concludes the court.
I think that's also vaguing the issue.
Well,
because I have seen many cases in the criminal setting where the court of appeals has not said that. They wanted a strict waiver of time. Just because, you know, you requested something and no waiver was put up and the court granted it.
Is speed in an investigation an important factor?
Once the 40-day time, once the time limit on the collective bargaining agreement start, in other words, once that time starts and you end the 40 days, yeah, I think speed is important, especially in this instance here, where some months have been delayed by the...
Why wasn't this hearing conducted prior to the when it was?
Because of constitutional issues relating to using any statements against him in any criminal proceedings. I mean, if he had given testimony had he made an inquiry, had the Internal Affairs Bureau asked him to answer specific questions beforehand, there's a scenario where whatever he said then would never be able to be examined by a court of criminal proceedings.
What you're saying is by someone exercising their constitutional right, it sort of impedes the investigation.
No, absolutely not. The constitutional rights here are completely protected by the investigation not beginning until after the criminal proceedings have washed out.
So you
had the criminal proceedings stay the internal investigation, and under the contractual time limits, the CDA, that was the appropriate way to handle this thing. So there was no one here that was trying to push him into a sector.
What was the necessity of having this hearing to begin with?
Wasn't it the inquiry?
Yeah.
The necessity was to find out what happened so you could proceed administratively.
But wasn't he already found not guilty?
Not guilty criminally does not necessarily mean the elements are going to be different. The only thing that they're looking at.
That finding is not good enough for the internal affairs.
It isn't, and again, you've got different elements, different considerations, different levels of proof.
So you can be found not guilty, but still be found guilty by the Internal Affairs Committee.
You can still be found violating a rule or a policy relating to a course of conduct because that other thing occurred, for example, while he was on duty, and yet he was outside the community when things were happening.
So the judicial determination means nothing.
only to the effect that judicial determination touches upon the elements of the violation of the...
I don't understand the purpose of this hearing. If the man has been found not guilty, why do you then have to investigate him further?
The elements are different. In one instance, you were looking at whether or not certain conduct required under the rules of the rules of operation for the police department has been violated, separate apart from whether or not any criminal activity occurred. What you're trying to do, though, by stopping the proceedings is not letting that investigation early on and the information coming from there in any way impact on the criminal proceeding in the way that's going to interfere with his rights. This is something entirely different. The elements are different.
But I have a hard time understanding why they have to be different.
It's just because the one thing, for example, had to do with why was he outside of the community doing his work, whereas the other matter, the criminal matter, had to do whether he engaged in criminal conduct.
What would that matter if he was found not guilty?
Violating a policy or procedure of the city of Dayton Police Department, irrespective of whether or not he committed a criminal act, there are a lot of policies and procedures that clerks, secretaries are required to maintain, same as police officers.
No matter what the circumstances are, you can get them one way or the other.
No, what matters is that if he had violated a policy or procedure, that doesn't necessarily mean he violated a criminal act. That is the difference.
Counsel, will you help me with one procedural thing before you sit down, please? The Court of Appeals, in ending its decision, says the judgment of the trial court will be reversed and remanded for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. If we affirm that, we've affirmed the fact that the Court of Appeals said he was not a witness. Now they say go back and have further proceedings. What would those further proceedings be?
In this instance here, the further proceedings would have been whether perhaps he had violated it.
Violated whatever the
sex charges were specific. I think in this particular instance, the Court of Appeals can be reversed what they did on the police court. I think it would go back procedurally to what the findings were by the hearing officer initially.
Well, all the Court of Appeals said was he was not a witness. Now, does that then go back? Because what you're doing, when you're reversing it, you're vacating the trial court's judgment and in the civil service judgment.
Right.
Now, for further proceedings, does it go back for another, for lack of a better word, hearing, another appearance before the Internal Affairs Sergeant Miller?
No. I think at that point here, you're either going back to adopting the hearing officer's recommendations or the civil service board is reexamining the record and seeing if there's another basis for which to uphold or strike down the hearing.
So if you go back to the hearing officer's hearing and his conclusions, there's no right of appeal in this case at all, then. It's over. If you say we go back to the hearing officer's findings.
I'm saying it goes back to number two. I think it's up to the civil service board to make that assessment. Do they then adopt or do they look at it in another way? And perhaps they see something different.
But haven't they already said that the 5 days was not an appropriate penalty in this situation?
Only in terms of 5 days not being appropriate, in terms of their belief that every person everywhere has a right to counsel and that this right was violated in this instance. As I said before,
okay.
I believe it's been violated if you look at the facts.
All right, yeah, I understand that. So then he gets a right to counsel when he goes back.
Only before the Civil Service Board, yeah. There could be probably additional briefs the Civil Service Board could ask. And he did have right to counsel.
Yeah, he already had counsel at the Civil Service Board.
Yeah.
So what are you...
There's no further investigation by the Dayton Police Department.
That's right, it's over, isn't it?
The hearing has been concluded, so now it's just a matter of relooking at whether the Civil Service Board is going to adopt the finding of the hearing officer, or whether they're going to find, based upon the record before them, other factual assessments different from or not explored, should I say, previously.
Yeah, they just did.
Thank you, Mr. Station. Mr. Hempling, you say a little over a minute of your time.
Thank you, sir. I've often asked myself what happened down at this court in the first.
the decision on the Court of Appeals. And I think this ties in with the arguments that have been made by the city about waiting time limits and all of the waiver issues that are involved and all the time limit issues that are involved. And I think the answer is pretty simple. Every court and every board that has considered this case has determined it solely on the basis of does he or doesn't he have the right to count. And I believe that talking about the time limits, the waiver of time limits, just muddies up that issue. Does he or doesn't he have the right to counsel? The Court of Appeals at this point has said no. If this court affirms that decision and says no, the statute doesn't confer on Don Piper the right to counsel in those situations, I don't think there's anything left to do but for not to serve this 5-day suspension. I think that's what happens if this court affirms. And to me, that would be a shame. That everyone has gone through all of this trying to determine that important issue. And this was the only instance that I'm aware of from the record that Don refused to participate in parts of this investigation. He had the interview on January 30th, and according to the city, the walkthrough occurred later. For all of these reasons, I ask the court to reverse the decision.
Thank you, Mr. Hempel. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.